Balabar, Grivadar. Adhiravachari Jaya Kunja Vihari. Adhiravachari Jaya Kunja Vihari. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane. Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyadya De Satarne. Oma Gana Timurandas Ya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakans Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavani Shri Prishubhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Patidanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shadvaiti Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 6. Brahma satisfies Lord Shiva. Text number 34. Sanandana Adyai Maha Siddhai Shantai Sangshanta Vigraham Upashyamanam Sakya cha prartra Guyaksha Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanadhyay Mahasidhyay Shantai Sam Shantavigraham Upashyamanam Sakyacha Ratra Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanadhyay Mahasidhyay Shantai Sam Shanta Vigraham Upashamanam Sakyacha Bratra Guyaka Rakshasam Pratra Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanaya Mahasidhyay Santa Sam Shanta Vigraham Pachamanam Sakyacha Pratra Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanadhyay Mahasidhyay Shantai Sam Shanta Vigraham Vajamanam Sakyacha Pratra Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanadhyay Mahasidhyay Shantai Sam Shanta Vigraham Upashyamanam Sakyacha Pratra Guyaka Rakshasam Ladies Nandanadya Rasadai Santanagraham Upashyamanam Sakyacha Pratra Guyaka Rakshasam Sanandanadhyay Mahasidhyay Sanandanadhyay The four Kumaras, headed by Sanandana, Mahasiddhyay, liberated souls, Shantai, saintly, Sangshanta, Vigraham, the grave and saintly Lord Shiva, Upashamanam was being praised. Sakya by Kuvera. Cha and Bratra by the Master. Guyaka Rakshasam of the Guyakas and the Rakshasas. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva sat there, surrounded by saintly persons like Kuvera, the master of the Guyakas, and the four Kumaras, who were already liberated souls. Lord Shiva was grave and saintly. So what did I just read? Such as?
And the Rakshas.
Who are some of the saintly persons who were surrounding him? Yes. And how was Lord Shiva? What was his consciousness like?
Great voice. Peaceful.
What's the words? What has, of course, it's peaceful. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Great, yes, that's right. Grave and saintly. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The personalities sitting with Lord Shiva are significant because the four Kumaras were liberated from birth. It may be remembered that after their birth, these Kumaras requested by their father to get married and beget children in order to increase the population of the newly created universe. But they refused. And at that time, Lord Brahma was angry. In an angry mood, Rudra, or Lord Shiva, was born. Thus, they were intimately related. Kuvera, the treasure of the demigods, is fabulously rich. Thus, Lord Shiva's association with the Kumaras and Kuvera indicates that he has all transcendental and material opulences. Actually, he is the qualitative incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, his position is very exalted. Sanandanadyai Mahasidyai Shantai Sam Shantavigraham Upashamanam Sakya Cha Bratra Guyaka Rakshasam. Lord Shiva sat there, surrounded by saintly persons like Kuvera, the master of the Guyakas, and the four Kumaras, who were already liberated souls. Lord Shiva was grave and saintly. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tadamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarane. Some interesting occurrences have happened before this particular instance that's mentioned here. As you've already read, there was a great sacrifice performed by Daksha, and at that sacrifice, he insulted Lord Shiva. And after that, he called for another sacrifice, didn't invite Lord Shiva. His daughter, Sati, went there, and she annihilated herself in the midst of the sacrifice. Lord Shiva became very disturbed. He sent one demon, Virabhadra, who cut off Daksha's head. And it's a rather an interesting family situation. In any case, after the disturbance of the sacrifice, the demigods were quite disturbed. And they went to Lord Brahma, asking what to do. Now they're all going to Lord Shiva, trying to have a happier family. This is counseling, or arbitration, or mediation, whatever you want to call it, in the heavenly planets. In other words, many things can be seen here, that generally speaking, people are very much interested in going to the heavenly planets, or at least those who have some information of the heavenly planets, They're well advertised in the Vedic literature, that there you can go to nice gardens with their angelic ladies, as Prabhupada says. And you can drink Sama Rasa, get intoxicated, and live there for millions of our years. Everything that people are dreaming about on this planet is going on there. But the same problems are also going on there. That as long as we're in the material world, we have to face the same problems. Actually, the material world exists as a dream where we're imagining ourselves to be this body. It's not even our dream. It's Lord Vishnu's dream, Mahavishnu, who's dreaming this material world on the basis of our desires. And in this world, there are so many varieties of dream-like states where we can so-called enjoy, but actually it's all suffering. Although some dreams are advertised as enjoyable, but we can see that they're all just different varieties of suffering. And to get out of this dream, there are so many mahajans. As it is said, Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlado, Janako, Bhishmo, Vayar, Vayasakir, Vayam. Some of these mahajans were sitting there with Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a mahajan, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, he's Shambhu. And here are the four Kumaras, Kumara, Kapilo, Kapilo, Manu. It is said, Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta, that if we want to get out of this material world, we have to take shelter of the Mahajans. Of course, here is the fourth canto. Only those who are free from sex desire are supposed to hear this, in one sense, or at least have control over their grosser desires, because things are introduced here like banyan trees 800 miles high. I don't know how, I think the biggest trees here in California, how big are they? They're a little less than 800 miles high. A tree 800 miles high would go from here to Las Vegas at least, right? Further than Las Vegas. San Francisco. Yeah, oh, past San Francisco. That's only 500 miles. Rather a big tree. For us, it would be a big tree. Just like if an ant is walking by one of the trees on the block here, for the ant, that tree is enormously high. In proportion to the ant's size, it's quite tall. Similarly, a tree 800 miles high in proportion to our size is quite tall, but that's, if we consider it, that no one in this universe is bigger than we are. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining from, not only from our little relative point of view, but also from different points of view, including the point of view of the demigods, where a tree 800 miles high is just an ordinary tree for them. For us to think, oh, that's not really possible, that there can be these people walking around in some planet, and there's gardens with trees 800 miles high, and there are mountains which have mangoes the size of elephants, and when they drop from the, I think there are 100, let's see, Meru is 100,000 yojanas, so that's 800,000 miles high, and the trees there are smaller. They're only 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. So this is rather a small tree, only 800 miles high. And it's in proportion to the size of the tree, a fruit the size of an elephant is practically insignificant. So it must be a lot of fruits there. And when they fall down, they create rivers of mango juice. And then when they go to the shore of the ocean of milk, when they get dried up by the sun, in contact with the shore of the milk ocean, they form into gold. And then the demigods, they collect the gold for their ornaments. So these things sound rather fantastic, practically unbelievable. The point is, if we can't believe these things, how are we going to believe that there's a cowherd boy and he lives in a planet called Goloka, shaped like a lotus flower, and there they have cows that give unlimited oceans of milk, and there Krishna's God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is herding cows for eternally. And he has a bluish complexion, and everyone there lives forever. So we can't believe this description of the demigods, then how are we going to believe a description of some spiritual planets floating in spiritual skies where everyone's spiritual? Just like they had the Wizard of Oz, where the lion, I think he was looking for courage, and the straw man was looking for a brain, and the tin man was looking for a heart. Who believes these things? That there was straw men and lions and tin men. People know this is just a fairy tale. And when we hear about in the spiritual world, the trees are alive and they give whatever fruit you want, whatever you want, you can go there, Chintamani. And the cows, there's no cow slaughter. They roam there and just give milk. So many descriptions are there of the spiritual world, the plants, the trees, the birds, everything's alive. Even the earth is alive. It's made out of Chintamani. So it's not so easy for the conditioned soul who has no experience of these things to believe. Similarly, since we have no experience of such fantastic realms as the heavenly planets, therefore we may not have very much faith. But the fourth canto will explain to us that it's actually not so much different from what we're used to. It's just on a different scale, that's all. Sometimes Prabhupada gives the example that in order to, a child may want the moon. So the mother takes a mirror and holds it up to the moon, reflects the moon into the mirror, and the child thinks, now I have the moon in the mirror. Or the child may wonder how far the moon is, and the mother may point out that it's right over the branch. So for the child, the branch is something conceivable, and therefore can understand that the somehow the moon is some little bit further than the branch. So for us, first of all, we have to understand about how this material world is working. That if we can't see Krishna working right before us, what we're seeing with these eyes right now, then how are we going to be able to understand Krishna in the spiritual world? If we can't accept the descriptions of the Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, how will we be able to understand or appreciate or accept Krishna's pastimes and the internal energy that are described in the tenth canto? Therefore, in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it mentions that it's much more important for the conditioned soul to hear about Krishna's pastimes in the external energy than to hear about his pastimes in the internal energy. So these pastimes are there to show us how to become a devotee. For instance, Lord Shiva is a Mahajan, and he's showing us how to engage in devotional service even in this world. Of course, we cannot imitate this anusharanam and anukarana. So anusharana means, I believe, to follow. Anukarana means to imitate. So we cannot imitate Lord Shiva, nor if we sat down, it is very likely the Kumaras will join us. Or even Kuvera. Even we send Kuvera an invitation to one of our festivals, and we ask him if he can help out with a contribution. It's very unlikely he's going to send a donation. But Lord Shiva is so exalted that not only he's surrounded by the Kumaras, who are great renunciates. At the beginning of the creation, Lord Brahma asked them to get married. But they immediately refused. They didn't think about it. Well, I'll come back tomorrow. Give me 24 hours. Show me a few pictures of who we're marrying. I can look at their astrological charts. Who are their fathers? Do they have enough money? No, they immediately refused. They had nothing to do with the material world from the very beginning. Such exalted renunciates were able to travel even up to Vaikuntha and personally meet Narayana. So Lord Shiva's obviously, for them to sit, to get Lord Shiva's association, he must be a great renunciate. Birds of a feather flock together. People like to associate with people who are, we say, interested in the same things. So Lord Shiva is certainly interested in renunciation since he's always engaged in meditation upon Krishna. He's the greatest of all the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavayatas Shambhu, and similarly the Kumaras are always engaged in meditating upon Lord Vishnu. But here we find that even Kuvera, who is the treasure of the demigods, is also interested in Lord Shiva's association. Although he's fabulously rich, more than we can imagine, still, they're all sitting together and engaged in Krishna conscious activities. Therefore, if we take seriously what's being said here, if we understand that there is a Lord Shiva, there is a Kuvera, there are four Kumaras. It's not just a storybook, the Srimad Bhagavatam. When we look up in the sky and see the sun with its unlimited energy floating in its orbit, we can understand that there must be an intelligent person who's put it there. It wasn't just by accident. That there is a controller behind the sun, there are a controller behind all the planets, and now we're being introduced to some of the important personalities who are influential in this material world, who are controlling these things. Now, someone may say that, why should we accept the Bhagavatam? This Prabhupada used to say, if you don't want to accept the Bhagavatam, that there is a Lord Shiva, Kumaras, then you tell us who's controlling the sun. Who's controlling the Brahma, these planets in the universe? You put forward your explanation, and we can examine it and see which one is actually correct. But it's interesting, although they have their Zeus and their Jupiter and so many other things in the ancient mythology, but more or less, they're all very similar to Indra, to the different types of personalities. But here is a much more consistent, much more exacting philosophy that we can get to know these personalities, and we see that ultimately they're all devotees of Krishna. Lord Shiva is so powerful that he can give people whatever they want in this universe, but he sits underneath a tree. Big tree. It's not a small tree. He's big time. So he's into a big time tree. But he's only interested in thinking about Krishna. So what to speak of ourselves? The four Kumaras, they're great personalities. Kuvera, he has unlimited wealth. But what are they doing? Are they out partying, chasing after ladies, getting intoxicated? No, they're simply sitting and talking about Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. That's the highest pleasure. That is the goal even for these great personalities. And their instructions are not how to get rich. We don't find Kuvera giving seminars on how to make money in the Bhagavatam. Or the four Kumaras, they don't even give us very much instructions, you know, separately from Krishna consciousness, how to be a brahmachari. There's no brahmachari class given by these Kumaras. They're all talking about the same thing. That is how to become Krishna conscious. How to focus the mind upon Krishna and give our love to him. And how that results in perfection. And that everything else simply results in problems. Even we become very wealthy, even we become very learned, even we become elevated to the heavenly planets, even we become as powerful as Daksha, there's only problems in the material world. No one is free from problems here. And the only solution is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, although it appears that we're a small little sect of people, the Hare Krishnas, doing their little thing, and, you know, because they couldn't make it in the material world, therefore all the failures have congregated themselves in a temple. And as I said yesterday, they can't, because they're completely frustrated, all their hair has fallen out. They're so poor because they can't do anything, therefore they just walk around in bed sheets all day long. They look half mad, always smiling. So, this is not actually the truth. The truth is that this is the solution to everyone's problems, and by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, and by the grace of the present devotees who are taking up this Krishna consciousness movement, this is the only solution throughout the whole universe for our real problems. That everyone, even the great exalted leaders of the universe, they've recognized it. And the so-called leaders of the present society, if they haven't recognized it, it's because they're not actually very good leaders. They haven't really gotten the reality. They may be very, as Prabhupada writes, they may be exalted politicians or big movie stars or athletes or philosophers, but if they haven't understood the value of Krishna consciousness and the method to become Krishna conscious, then they're simply wasting their time. So practically speaking, the only people on this planet who are not wasting their time are those who are engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement, following the predecessor acharyas, such as Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, and here Kuvara also. So we have a lot to learn from them. And if we hear what they're giving us is the process of Krishna consciousness, and we take to it, then our lives have some meaning, and perfection will actually be there. Maybe we won't become Kuvera. Maybe he won't give us a dime, even if we follow his instructions. Maybe we won't become great renunciates like Lord Shiva, but we'll become Krishna conscious, and our actual life will begin again, and this dreamlike world will go away. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Or comments? Or
you mentioned that leaders who are intelligent know about this, the Vedas and the Hare Krishnas, that this is the goal of life. Do you think there's any, or do you have any knowledge of any leaders out there who know about the Vedas and are using them to take advantage of people, or, you know, like the laws of karma, or to exploit others?
To exploit anyone who has any knowledge comes from the Vedas. So people who are, nothing comes about which is not in the Vedas. Everyone's learning from disciple succession. So people have some power is because they executed either in this life or in previous lives the instructions of the Vedas. So if they're not following them now and misusing them for sense gratification, means that they've been given an exalted position, but they've decided to, or somehow or another, they're misusing it.
Like, I've heard that, like, the Swedish people are expert at worshiping their ancestors. They have, like, the best charts of their ancestors, and they're very expert at worshiping their ancestors, and you can see that they're very prosperous.
Well, I don't think, I don't think anyone in this material world nowadays, at least on this planet, is very prosperous.
Yeah, I mean, like in the material sense, they don't need
it. Not even in the material sense.
They're very rich. They have
no one's rich. Everyone's poverty-stricken, practically speaking, nowadays. Just comparatively. There's no clean air. There's no fresh water. The food is, in general, is not very good. So from the material point of view, people are have a false conception of what richness is, what riches is. Richness means happy, simple life, pure mind, pure air, pure water, pure food, nice relationships. That's wealth, freedom from anxiety. But huge armies, there's nothing to eat that's good, that's pure, the air is all contaminated, water is contaminated, people don't even know people live next door to them. That's not material wealth, that's poverty.
Is it like that in Sweden and stuff like that? I heard that they're very rich and they have a wonderful health system.
I just recently read that had one of the highest suicide rates in the world.
Yeah.
They do have a wonderful health system.
Health system, it means everyone's diseased. Well, we're not saying, compared to one place, if some person's on the street who's a poverty-stricken beggar and someone else has, a few dollars in his pocket.
Everybody's poor, right?
Right. Everyone's comparatively, maybe. But if you want to talk about richness, we have to look at it from actually the point of view of the Vedas. Some pure land, nice land, which can grow nice food, a cow, nice atmosphere, where the air is fresh and pure and you can breathe it, where everyone's very happy and satisfied and there's nice relationships. That's richness in the material world. That's wealth. Yes.
Can you maybe say a little something about death? It's already difficult enough to understand. It's already difficult enough to try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his associates, for that matter, then what is the purpose of the Bhagavatam to speak about 80,000-mile-high trees and 800-mile-high trees and a phenomenon that would maybe make someone even more atheistic or non-believer than a believer?
Well, it's good, because those people have that mentality. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, I've described so many amazing things about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So what will happen if the people are like hogs and dogs, they hear it? What will happen to them? What will they do or think? So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, they won't believe a word, I say, because they're hogs and dogs. Therefore, I rejoice to think that they won't be able to understand a thing. So when people read this, who are like hogs and dogs, they won't believe a thing. So therefore, they won't go on. It takes some qualification to understand this philosophy, and it'll take even more qualification to understand the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world. So they won't criticize Krishna. They won't be able to enter in. They won't bother with the 10th canto because they won't get there. Or even if they get there, they won't understand a thing. Therefore, they won't be able to harm or enter into the pastimes of Krishna.
Well, what do you consider innocent then? Who's innocent and who's guilty? In other words, there are some innocent people. Well, for lack of a better word, I use the word innocent.
Yeah.
That have been forced by certain circumstances to be taught or trained in a particular way. And so by their association, they've developed a particular mindset. And how is it that an innocent person like that then should be ineligible to enter into the understanding of the person?
No, there is an eligibility. By the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sent the acharyas such as Srila Prabhupada to deliver these books to people. So if they start with the first canto, and in the association of devotees, or the Bhagavad Gita, in the association of devotees, make an effort to try to understand and follow, then these things will be revealed to them. Krishna is very anxious to get everyone back to the spiritual world. But the opportunity, they have to take the opportunity. If they take up Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, then everything will be revealed gradually. And if they decide not to, then that's their choice. That's the free will that they're exercising. They decide to follow their favorite movie star or their favorite politician or their favorite other religious leader who's not actually Krishna conscious, and that's their choice. Krishna is offering so many opportunities. But we should understand that there are so many persons who in the past they've already executed devotional activities and they're simply waiting for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to make the arrangements for them to take up devotional service again. And there are so many persons in the past who systematically avoided Krishna, and practically speaking, it doesn't matter what we do, they're simply going to avoid Krishna anyhow. Therefore, we should simply become an instrument, and by becoming an instrument for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we'll be benefited, and he'll be able to perform his mission. And there may be a few people who are sitting on the fence, so to speak, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will give them an opportunity. If they take it, they'll be fortunate. And if they reject it, then they'll be unfortunate.
So what is your suggestion for those of us that cannot understand this 80-mile tree?
You don't have to understand an 80-mile tree.
What do you recommend
miles.
For us to do?
What's that?
What do you recommend for us to do? How to understand this? To just
don't understand
accept
it
or just try to go
no,
on?
No, it's
or,
not very important. What does it matter if there's an 80-mile tree or an 8-million-mile tree? It doesn't make any difference to us.
Okay.
Because our business is devotional activities. The idea is we're simply supposed to offer something to Krishna. Not that we have to offer a leaf from an 80-mile tree. Get the whole temple together, pick up the leaf and bring it. No, we just have to offer a little leaf to Krishna.
Well, someone might think that if there's a mango falling from a tree that's the size of an elephant, it'd be kind of like dangerous to be walking around in that area.
For us, it certainly would be.
You could get killed.
Or if you're any in the vicinity, you can have a good feast. Edward Falls, you can go down to the ocean of mango juice or the river of mango juice, which is right near the river of sugarcane juice. And take a couple of glasses and offer them. But it's not actually, it's not impossible. First of all, to get there is not going to be so easy for us. I don't think we have to worry. We took a wrong turn on the highway. We wound up, you know, right when one of the fruits was falling. I don't think we're going to wind up by the shore of the ocean of milk anytime in the future. But just like we see sometimes you put out, you know, a few drops of sugar, immediately you have 10 ants drowned in it. Isn't that right? So if the ants heard that there's actually, you know, mangoes, they fall from trees and they form, you know, these rivers, they think, oh, that's impossible. But for them, one of our regular trees, when it falls down, one of the mango fruits, it does, for them, it's like a river. So it's not inconceivable, but as far as whether we go to the river place where the mangoes are dropping and get some mango juice, we wouldn't make any difference. We couldn't drink that much anyhow. We can get a few Alfonso mangoes here, and that's about all we can eat. You don't have to go to the river of mangoes.